Good morning. So I have been asked to share with you some thoughts about churning. So if there are some points that you have some questions about how to churn on or something like that, then please tell me so I know where you... where you're coming from, what you're interested in, and whether this is indeed what you would like me to talk about, churning the knowledge. Yes? No? Yes? What you want to go into the depth of. I think ever since 1937, or 1935 or 36, the question of it being very soon that the world will be in serious chaos. You just sit one chair over and then I'll be able to see everyone. Yeah. That's great. So it isn't news to us, but at the same time, question of the knowledge of destruction. Is probably what you're talking to me about. Actually, to change the self is very difficult. Though this is easy Raj Yoga, it's difficult and it takes a very long time. Anything that takes a very long time tends to create a feeling of, well, you know, we have time, and so it'll happen by itself. So, no, that is a wrong interpretation, you can say. Every step on the way of this long journey actually requires effort. So I think one very important thing for us to consider is how do I pace myself in such a way that I can consistently and continuously, with perseverance, keep going at a rate which I can sustain. Because along the way, if we say this is a journey of remembrance, along the way we hit many obstacles. And we also hit inner experiences that, oh, this is too much, it's too long, it's too boring, da-da-da-da-da-da. These things come along. This is also Maya. Or we observe the behavior of some people who are in power over us and we say, well, in this situation I cannot move. This is also Maya. Right? Anything that we can use the word because for, it's an obstacle, it's a kind of a Maya, you see. And so we need to actually realize that the path of Gyan is one of constantly swimming upstream. And the current that is pushing us the other way is not weak, it's quite strong. So it is naive for us to think that we are just, you know, all of a sudden going to heaven like nice little angels and that'll be fine. We'll get on a little white cloud, get a harp, you know, start singing, keep our halo polished and we can fit on somebody's birthday card. But that's a very kindergarten level, you know. And although Baba says, sweet children, he doesn't mean sweet children age 5. He means sweet children age, 20 to 90. I see. And also, many people, they come into this gyan quite young. You know, maybe in their late teens or early 20s. How many came in at that young age? Any of you? Yeah. And so what we also find along the path of gyan is that we are growing up, physically, socially, emotionally, psychologically, academically, professionally, all these other things are also there. And there are some people, they come into gyan at a relatively mature age, and so they may have already passed through a few things. So, okay, that is there. But we still have to move forward internally, spiritually. And even if a person is quite physically old, they're not necessarily mature. There are many people who feel that, well, as soon as I get some gray hairs, people will start respecting me. But it takes more than that, They may. The biggest problem that we constantly hear about is ego. The continuous theme in every Murli is be soul conscious, overcome body consciousness. And when we first come in gyan, we say, yes, I know what that is. I know what the soul is. I know what the body is. This is very easy, But what happens is, as you go further, you find that the level of understanding that you have is actually quite superficial. And so there is a built-in situation that happens to every single one of us, which is like a wall. You're going along, you do your Amrit Vela, you go to class, you offer bhog, you have traffic control, you practice this and that virtue, and you try to develop this and that power, and you do your chart at the end of the day, and it's all very nice, and all of a sudden it doesn't work anymore. Have you experienced that? Now, why it doesn't work? Because, not that it doesn't work, but the level on which you have been doing it is no longer relevant. You may experience that it's not working anymore, but what you have to do is really, really look at yourself and give yourself the 7 days course all over again at a much deeper level. That what really is the soul? What really is Shiv Baba? Who really is Brahma Baba? What exactly is the cycle? What is this tree? What are these virtues? What are these vices? Because they're very deep and they're very subtle. And so the process of our development is a long, lifelong learning journey. And of course, each one of us listens to the same Murli on the same day in some or another language all over the world. Some of us are newer in gyan and some of us are older in gyan, but all of us are students. And every single one of us is interpreting the Murli the way that we interpret it. There's just as many ways of being a BK as there are BKs. And when we first come into gyan, we think, okay, this is how you have to be a BK. And then somebody else will come along and say, no, 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 this is how you have to be a BK. And you'll say, well, that's confusing. I always thought it was this. Now you're telling me it's that. You know? There are many, many ways to be a BK. There are many, many ways to be soul conscious. And it, in this sense, it's a very subjective and personal practice. Of course, there are conventions, right? You know what I mean by conventions. There are conventions about how we teach the course. There are conventions about how to do a meditation commentary. There are conventions about how to read the Murli. That's okay. This is necessary. But above and beyond these conventions, each and every single one of us must make sure that we remain interested. You know, anything repetitive has two consequences. One is a positive one and the other is negative. In a positive sense, anything that is repeated is becomes more and more firmly entrenched and you remember it and this kind of thing. But on the negative side is boring. Yes, I've heard that before. And if you meditate every time the same way, your mind is going to say, well, don't you have anything else for me to do? You know, we did this already yesterday and we did it again the day before, you know, and what is this? So the mind has a right to demand fresh food for thought. And every day we get a fresh Murli. And I remember one day counting up how many points there are in a Murli, and I came up with 300. And if you would churn 300 points in a 24-hour period, give or take a little bit for sleeping, eating, doing other things, there is actually plenty in every Murli for us to think about. But which point will we be struck by? Because it is the case, isn't it, that on different days, different points strike you particularly. Some days you are not really looking for a striking point. You're really looking for an overall impression of the effect of the water of knowledge as it courses over the jagged stone of your iron-aged self. Right? So that you smooth out. That is also a nice way to listen to the Murli, you know, just to let it wash over you. Huh? And just feel the effect. Feel the effect of the Murli washing over you. And one day, Baba had given a very nice way for people to listen to the Murli. And he had said that as you hear a point, you hear the point, and many of the points are quite visual, or you can kind of sense them or feel them in a sort of a sensory type of way. And so you can create in your mind the image that is associated with that point and experience the image of it or experience the feeling of it so that you go through, you know, 200-300 different feelings during the course of the hour or so that you're listening to the Murli. And you find also that there's a difference between reading the Murli and listening to the Murli. or listening to the Murli over a speaker. You know, it's a big difference. There's a difference. Sometimes people say, well, there's a difference in who's telling the Murli. Because different people, as they read the Murli, they read it in their way, you know. And each way is actually very valid. We tend to get used to somebody's way, you know, and we go along with it. But we also have to be careful that we're not lulled into a kind of a complacency. That, okay, I sit, you know, I listen to the Murli and it's all very nice, and then I leave the Murli room or the hall, and then I spend the day as if I didn't actually hear the Murli. You know, well, you give yourself the satisfaction that you did it, but it becomes something which Baba calls as neminat. Have you ever heard of this word? Neminat. Have you heard? Yes? No? No. Okay, well, neminat means that you are the person who is doing the action only as a discipline, not from the heart, not in a way that you take an experience from it. So it's a discipline, but it's not really doing what a discipline could do. And so even the term discipline has a variety of interpretations. Yeah? Because if we do something out of a routine, it has less impact. If we do something regularly, but at the same time with interest and from our heart, then it has quite a lot of impact. Our mood will affect these things. The quality of our Amrit Vela beforehand will affect it. You see, because one thing is quantity of meditation, but also we have to think about the quality. And the reason why this process takes years and years and years. Right? There are some people who have been Raj Yogis for 70 years. Anybody here been a Raj Yogi for 70 years? No. You may be 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, like that. And if we do the disciplines in a neminat sort of way, we will not experience progress. We may have a sanskar to be very disciplined, and we may do the thing in a disciplined way because we're disciplined, but if our heart is not in it, then it doesn't work quite so well. You see. And some people may say, oh, I've never missed a Murli in 50 years, you know, but were you in the Murli with your heart? Maybe someone listens the Murli sporadically, but deeply in their heart, they're right there with Baba. So who is getting the most out of it? You see, there are various criteria, and you can't say, well, it's only a discipline that counts. Discipline counts. Concentration counts. Being there from the heart counts a great deal, you know? And so then we have to continuously look at the self and see, all right, who am I? What am I? What does this all mean to me? And what really are the obstacles that I'm encountering? Because the Murli is also a mirror. And the way that we listen to the Murli, or read the Murli, study them early, and the way it impacts us, I mean, sometimes it will bore you, sometimes it will disturb you, sometimes you'll be unable to concentrate on it, sometimes it will irritate you. It will produce many varieties of experiences. It is capable of producing negative experiences, and it's capable of producing positive experiences. And it's not just it has a mind of its own and it's decided to give you a hard time on that particular day. No. Although the Murli is like acid. It is like acid. And when the soul is impure, and, you know, if you put acid on some base metal, it'll start fizzing and changing color and doing all this. So as much as the Murli disturbs you, it's really kind of touching parts of yourself that are actually impure. And so I think it's quite interesting to go into the depth of the things that the Murli bothers you about. One thing is impurity, different aspects of body consciousness, ego, greed, etc., you know, and there's much more than just five vices. I remember a few years ago, we were given a direction from Madhuban at a time when I was living in Los Angeles, and we were asked to have group sessions on anger. And so we said, okay, we'll do that. And a few of us got together and we decided we'll do it on the Saturday mornings after class. And we thought, well, the first thing we'll do is we'll try to find out how many different kinds of anger there are. And we came up with, I think, about 200 different varieties of anger. You see, all the way from shouting at people to refusing to talk to them to sulking to turning your back on people to, you know, using little silver needle to stick into them. All sorts of ways in which you can be violent to a person and hurt a person and enjoy hurting them. People do that, you see. And whenever an aspect of the Murli comes along which actually hits the nail on the head of one of your vices, you'll go, you know, and you'll say, why is Baba speaking like that? That's not necessary, but it is necessary because we are very resilient and reluctant to admit our shortcomings. We have power to justify our negative behaviors because they're necessary. And Baba says, well, they're not necessary. You say, yes, they are. This one is necessary. Okay, I'll give up those, but not this. You see. And we can only actually give up anything when we're ready to. And so this is another reason why we have to actually give a lot of time to meditate. And you know that not very long ago, Baba had suggested 108 hours a month. That comes to about 3.5 hours a day. So I experimented with this and I found that if you do all the timings that we have, you know, we have the 4 to 4:45 and everybody's supposed to have a half an hour before the murli, although hardly anybody does, but it's all there in the schedule. And you have your traffic controls, there's about 5 or 6 of them. And then there's been a new point introduced, you know, every hour on the hour. They do this in London, they do this in Shantivan. 1 minute music is played that you can go into, a minute of meditation every hour. And if you give yourself a good hour in the evening, 6:30 to 7:30, although most people are fairly good about 7 to 7:30. But here in Mount Abu, we in Pandapavan at the Tower of Peace, most of the Madhuban Nivasis like to do 6 to 8, 2 hours in the evening. As far as possible, we try to finish our duties by that time. And then have a little meditation before you sleep, 15 minutes, something like that. And if you do all of those things, you find that it's actually quite doable, provided there's no interruptions and no crisis and all of these things. In an ideal day, where there's nothing, no big demands are going on, it's very easy to do 3.5 hours meditation. And if you can actually do that, you find over a little while, it has a very good effect of making your mind very, very clear. It's accumulation. And over the few days, you could even try that here because you don't have much in the way of locket work to do or anything like that. And try to really build up the meditation and try to really see what comes in the murli that really does strike you, that, yeah, this, I must go into the depth of this. So if you have a combination of 3.5 hours meditation, and then you really attentively listen to the murli and look for what is the interesting thing that really strikes me today, you will find that there's a good recipe for a feeling of progress, a feeling of moving forward. Because you come to Madhuban, you spend all this money, you create time, you come to Madhuban, you want to be really ready to meet Baba. Baba's coming on the 21st of October. And you never know what might happen in between. You might get sick. You might get in a bad mood. You might, some or another thing may happen, you see. But you have to have some inner equipment, inner credit to rise above all of these possible challenges. Use your meditation, use your attitude that I will handle whatever challenge comes. Any kind of bit of destruction is a destruction, right? Any kind of a disturbance is a crisis. And we need to be able to make sure that our meditation level and our absorption of knowledge level is such that we can actually bring it to bear as and when any test or crisis comes. So that then when we do meet Baba, whatever it is, if we are comfortable or uncomfortable, if we like our seat or we don't like our seat, if we like what we see or we don't like what we see, but that we can be detached from all of that. and ready for whatever Baba is going to say, and to be able to also absorb the vibrations and the light which Bab Dada gives out, you know. So really make yourself so soul conscious that regardless of what's going on the material level, you can keep yourself in the subtle consciousness, because Bab Dada is in the angelic form. And many times he has told us, now meet me in the same level, the same space where I am. So we also need to be in our own subtle and angelic form. And this requires purity. So in Madhuban, very often people experience, things happen to purge the soul of one thing or another. And so tolerance of such purging is a good thing. It may be a sickness, it may be a mental storm, it may be someone's bothering you, it can come in any different kind of a way. But to be able to position oneself in such a mental attitude that whatever it is that's coming along, it's cleaning out something which doesn't belong, and let it go. So that then as you start to make all these things happen in your inner purusharth, your inner effort, that the experience of the murli that you have is a very clear, very positive one. Because the murli mirrors your vices, it mirrors your effort, it mirrors your potential, it mirrors your achievement, and it's also giving you all kinds of other messages about how to proceed from here. You see? And so it's as if the murli is being spoken to each one very personally. And this is why most people experience the murli relatively differently from each other, because there's such a personal communication going on. And if your conversation with Baba takes into account the way in which you experience how Baba is communicating with you through the murli, your dialogue with Baba will be correspondingly very much enriched. You see, I think that when people forget about talking to Baba, they lose a lot. Talking to Baba is an internal thing. It's very important, because Baba is not just a thing on the wall, you know. Baba is a someone, and he hears you, and he talks to you, and we have recognized him. This is our speciality. We may not have any other specialities, but we have this one. We have recognized Baba. And recognizing somebody means you can talk to them. And so if you don't talk to someone, knowing who they are, but you don't talk to someone, then what is that? It's a sin of omission. And so we must talk to Baba. Because then you are all the time invoking Baba, that he is with me. He's talking with me as a teacher when the murli is being read, but he's also sitting with me as my friend as we listen to it. You know, because you can make Baba be wherever you want, you know. And he can almost become omnipresent for BKs. And definitely when he says, you know, relate to me in all relationships, it means to involve ourselves with Baba through conversation, through an inner connectedness, such that we get to be able to let go of all the other people that are our support system. Because eventually we need to be able to have such relationships with everyone that we have good relationships with everyone, but we're not in any kind of an enmeshment with anyone, so that nobody feels that they can claim us, because we need to keep ourselves free for Baba. We need to keep our mind free. If we're thinking about somebody, it's usually we're thinking about that we don't like their behavior, or that we're annoyed with them, so we're giving them what for in our mind, though we may not say it actually to them. Or we complain to them, or we repeat to them, you did this and you did that and you did the other. And all of this creates a karmic bond between yourself and that person. And so one of the things that Baba has given us is thousands and thousands of yuktis. When we start thinking about a person particularly, because we don't like what they just did or what they just said or what they didn't do or whatever that is, you see, I find one very good yukti is to use the knowledge of drama in such a way as to say, well, this person has an absolute right to say this, to do this, to behave in this way. Whether it's right or wrong is neither here nor there. But for a soul to perform an action, whether I think it's right or wrong, doesn't make any difference. They have an absolute right to do the action that they're doing, or to not do the action that they're not doing. So I find that inside your mind, if you say to that person, instead of complaining you did this or you didn't do that, say, ah, you have absolute right to behave in this most ignoble way. It stops the waste thoughts. Because once you've given a person absolute right to behave as despicably as they want, that's it, you can put a full stop. They have the right. It's their part in drama, okay. Even you can say, I give you full permission to insult me as much as you want, but I will not take it personally. You know. So you keep yourself light, keep yourself free. You see, knowledge of drama takes years to understand, because we have built-in preconceptions which we consider as right understanding. We don't think of them as preconceptions. We think, yeah, this is my right understanding. And right understanding is, well, in a spiritual organization, all the people have to be perfect. Right? That's what we think. And then if anybody isn't, then we say, oh, this is no good. Right? You see, this is a very, very superficial kind of understanding. What we need to understand is the spiritual organization that we find ourselves in is a very wonderful family. It's a very wonderful support system. And it has all kinds of people in it with all kinds of sanskaras, and they're all the right ones. And whether they feel pleasant or unpleasant doesn't make much difference to anything. But if we can find a way to interact with each and every one that we come across in a way that works, then we're making effort. You see? If we overlay our preconceptions, you can't do this, you have to do that, you shouldn't be doing this, all this kind of thing, then we get into a lot of waste thoughts, which doesn't make any difference to them. It definitely makes a lot of difference to you, because you're wasting a lot of time by thinking about waste thoughts. I see. So this is the thing. So this tape has stopped and the brother is gone. So you can either turn the tape around or miss the next bit. I think it's very, very useful to think of oneself in the very middle of the drama. Yeah? A point in the middle of the big circle. You're in the middle of it, and everything that's going on in this kind of big 360-degree sphere, it's not just a flat thing, it's a whole sphere. And whatever is going on is exactly fine. Nothing wrong with it. Then next question is, where's the profit? We must take profit from every scene. Otherwise we're not good businessmen. And Baba's title is businessman. He says in the Murali, businessman. Today we had ordinary titles, right? Ordinary, like he's a boatman, that's fairly ordinary. He's a goldsmith, not the designer of the jewelry, but the guy who cleans up the gold, the goldsmith. Like a blacksmith, he puts the iron in the fire. And he's a gardener, you know? And he's also a lot of very, very elevated things which people thought were impossible to understand, but we can understand them, they're accessible to us. But then when we go, as in today's Murali, the ordinary things, they contain great mysteries and great depth. So we need to be able to go into that. That what is this gardener, this person who makes flowers happen? And we are the child of the one who makes flowers happen, so we also make flowers happen. Flowers through the mouth. Yeah. It's very, very important to find ways to be able to give respect to each and everyone who comes along. Whether they give respect to you doesn't have anything to do with anything. It's not like that. We're not playing our part as a reaction to other people's parts. We're playing our part, full stop. I, the soul, playing my part under the direction of Baba, who is the director. And I'm a hero actor. Hero actors get to play parts with all kinds of villains and devils and whatever, whatever. And it doesn't matter if somebody is a devil or not. Anyway, they're all souls. They can play whatever part they want. But what part I am playing, that's my affair. What part somebody else is playing, that's not my affair. Who cares? Right? So if I'm thinking about somebody else's part, then for that period of time, my attention on my part is missing. And then instead of actually playing, I may be reacting to somebody else's part. In which case, the value of my part is correspondingly reduced. And the fortune that I'm making is also correspondingly reduced. So, I find this term enlightened self-interest quite interesting. Enlightened self-interest means that whatever you're doing at any given moment in this gyan, you're doing it for your benefit. And if you are in a scene which appears to be negative, then you have the option to interpret it in such a way that you are enriched by it. If you are not enriching yourself, you're wasting your time. Isn't it true? And very often it is the apparently negative scenes that are the most enriching, because they're the ones that require us to really do some work inside to position ourselves in such a way that we are actually taking the scene in a positive manner, in a way that is enriching us, and in a way that is improving our skills. Gyan is very much about developing social skills. When we're in a materialistic consciousness, we're quite concerned with the development of... you just tell him you changed it, otherwise he'll change it again. We're quite concerned with developing technical skills, or we're developing, you know, pieces of paper, diplomas and whatnot. Many people have a very deep and intense relationship with their computer. You know, and computers are quite interesting because they don't have dysfunctional behavior patterns. If you press some buttons that it doesn't relate to, it'll say, "You can't do that." "I won't, you know, perform that action. It can't be done. It's not in my program," you know. But when we're with people, we quite easily get into interactions which are actually dysfunctional. And so then it creates upset, disturbance, things like that for us. And our relationships with the people go wrong. And so in Gyan, we are taught, you know, we have to give respect to each and everyone. That's the bottom line. That's the meaning of Om Shanti. You see, if they give respect to you or not, it's neither here nor there. Who cares? And make any difference. Otherwise, in body consciousness, we are very conditional. We say, "I will only give respect to somebody who I'm impressed by, or who shows me respect, or who looks like somebody I can benefit from." Right? That's very greedy. Isn't it? And it's also very unspiritual to give respect on that basis. And because it means that you're fundamentally self-interested. Enlightened self-interest is, the operative word is enlightened, that I will give respect to this person because it's very beneficial for me to do that. Whether if I'm impressed with the person or not impressed with the person, that shouldn't make any difference. If I'm impressed with somebody, they will definitely deceive me sooner or later, so I better be careful about that. And if I look down on somebody, I'm the opposite of impressed with them, I'm disimpressed with them, I think that they're lesser or lower or not interesting or whatever. And because of that reason I don't give respect, I may find out later to my cost that that was a big mistake. It would have been very appropriate and proper to give respect to that person, but my prejudice makes me not do that. It's a big mistake, you see. And so we don't know the future. We don't know what's going to happen next. If we do the simple dharana of giving respect to each and every person, whether they're in high position or low position or no position or what, always there is going to be some benefit coming to me sooner or later. So if you make that as a very good personal policy, you will find that your social interactions become very good. You see? So social practices are a very important part of Gyan. There are systems within India that are very much concerned with wise social practices, which may not be very much in your awareness because they may be not there in the Western culture or something like that, but they have their value. And so it's quite important to find out what these things are, because we need to realize that we are the children of the unlimited Father, and there are unlimited cultures that we interact with. And interaction is a social practice. And we need to be very aware of not violating people's sensitivities. We need to be very aware that our particular way of seeing things and doing things and understanding things and interpreting things is not the only way. And there are other ways. And it is a very important part of our education to find out what those are so that we're able to interact with people in a very subtle way, in a very balanced way, without violating invisible things. It's very easy to do that. It's very easy to have a misunderstanding and make a social faux pas because we just didn't take the time to understand about it or learn about it. So this is all kind of included in the practice of being respectful. And because every one of us are in disguise, we're in ordinary bodies, we don't know who's who. You know? You don't know who you might not be sitting next to. Even it was said, I think in the Murali this morning, you know, Christ is now in the form of a beggar. I remember my Lokic father told me, oh, I had a vision of Christ in the form of a beggar. What do you think this means? I said, yeah, it's right. But you come across that beggar, you will not know that this is Christ. Do you give respect or do you mistreat? And if you find out later who that is, how you will feel, you know? Because even if someone is not of your religion, they're still great souls, you know? So we have to think about these things. And we have to churn quite deeply to really understand what Baba means by the very simple things that he speaks about. Because he did. Do you have a question?
Yeah. What's the difference between churning and thinking?
Churning and thinking. Churning and thinking is the same thing. But then it's also different. There's simran. Simran. Not long ago, Daddy Jenki was talking about simran. And simran is a word that is connected with the Sikh scriptures. There's one called Sukhmani. Sukhmani, which means the bead of happiness. Or that if you turn on that bead, think about that bead, you will get happiness. And so there is an expression, simmer, simmer, sukh pao. I will just simmer a little bit. Thought is such a thing that if you mix up positive thoughts and negative thoughts, then you're in a polluted inner mental environment and it creates exhaustion, creates weakness. It even creates different kinds of illnesses. So the thing that's most important, I think, for a BK is to find lots of different yuktis to stop the streaming of waste or negative thoughts. So this word churning. Of course, churning is not an English word for anything to do with consciousness. It's applying to what you do to milk in order to get butter. And so it's a metaphor. In Madhuban, in the early morning, there's someone with a big container and there's a rope across and this big spatula, and you just go like this, tick, 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 backwards and forwards, spinning this thing in the milk, and this is how you get butter. And so this analogy has been applied to the gyan, because Baba is always saying that I'm giving you the milk of knowledge, and your job is to churn it so that you can extract the butter. And this is the thing that nourishes you, and also that you can feed to others to nourish them. So we have the English term cogitation, which is quite good for churning, cogitating. You take an idea and you just, you know, move it around in your head this way, that way, and think about it. And even if it's a point that you don't understand very well, think about it this way, that way, up, down, sideways, you know. And then gradually the import of that point becomes clear to you and emerges as a kind of a piece of butter. So churning is really for that. In BK jargon, BK terminology, churning is something that you do to points of knowledge. And then you'll get butter, because that point of knowledge is a little glass of milk or a big pitcher of milk, however you want to do it. But if you apply churning to something which is not gyan, which may be an objection or a criticism or anything like that, then it's compared with churning water. And if you churn water, you will only get tired. If you churn milk, you will get butter. And so when you want to do any churning, in that sense of really cogitate upon some point of knowledge or some combination of points of knowledge, because that's also a good thing, to look at the paradoxical points that are there in gyan, like whether we have free will or it's all destined, you know. That's quite a paradox. And you need to churn on that quite a bit in order to get the butter of being able to resolve or to be able to handle paradox.
Yes, see.
You know, whether destruction is a good or a bad thing. And if we say destruction is a good thing, and then we go dancing in happiness because 40,000 Pakistanis have just been squashed by a few rocks, is that appropriate? You know that, huh? 40,000 people in Pakistan have just died from a big earthquake, 7.4. And 400,000 have been adversely affected. It's the biggest earthquake in Pakistan's history. And it's affected parts of India, parts of Afghanistan, other surrounding areas. And it took place 3 days ago. You know, and it took place at 9:30 in the morning, so school children were buried in their schools, and then it started raining and made everything into mud. And the people in the mountain areas, all the boulders started rolling down the mountains and squashing everything in sight. And so it's a very, very big disaster. I see, and just last Christmas we had this big tsunami which took out about 300,000 people. You see, and so, yeah, this destruction is going on. When you're in the pathway of one of those boulders, that's it for you, you know. So you have to be in Baba's remembrance. You have 1 second. So it's a good thing or it's a bad thing. But let's just finish this point. Now sit with this point, you know. Because some people, they say, oh, destruction is very good, so let's get happy about all this human suffering. Is that appropriate? Or, no, we have to be detached from all of these things. So are we going to get upset by all this suffering? Or what is the way to, what is the attitude to adopt in the face of these things? Because all these things, if you don't know about it, it's not happening to you, it's happening to somebody else. But one fine day, it's going to be your turn, you see. And, you know, Baba has been making us ready for all of these things. And the way in which we think affects all this, you see. So I think the most important is that I should not allow in my mind an attitude to occur that is negative. Whether I'm churning, simmering, cogitating, whatever, or just thinking, you know, whatever word I'm using for the thought process, I have to make sure that it is authentic, it is real, you see. Because there's no use gloating over somebody else's misery, that's very inappropriate. But also one has to be able to be detached. Detached doesn't mean uncaring or uncompassionate. Detached means that anyway you know what it is, and you know the intensity, and you feel the intensity of the human suffering, but that you are not overwhelmed by it, and that your processes of consciousness are not impacted by that. So that you can maintain your ability to give sakash. Because we have to be able to send patience, peace, love, you know, to be there for the people who are experiencing these things, and to know that it is the time when this kind of thing happens, and it will come our way also. And we will either leave the body or not leave the body. So we have to be ready for either way. You know? But our thought must be very pure. And our thought needs to be not very large quantities. Because when you use thoughts in large quantities, only very few of them are worthwhile, and all the rest of them is a drain on your thought energy, which is also like a drain on your yoga power. And if you lose all your yoga power, then you're not able to perform the function that Baba has demanded that we make ourselves ready for. So we need to be with Baba so that any time we may be a survivor in a disaster, and we may need to help. We may need to help mentally, physically, attitudinally, all kinds of ways. And the main thing is patience in such a situation, and coolness. We saw from some news reports, some 100 children were buried in a school, 60 were killed, 40 after 60 hours were rescued. So that's a very nice thing, but they're all traumatized. So they need something for that, you know. And okay, so they survived it, but then it's cold, and there's aftershocks, and there's no food. And people are brutalizing each other. In after disasters, there's also a lot of brutal behavior that takes place. So the terrorism in the area has increased to a very large extent. So it's very hard for people to handle that. And so we have to be able to send out very pure, very peaceful, very strong vibrations which reach people and can give them a feeling of hope, a feeling of patience, feeling that there is somebody, you know, because at such a time they feel abandoned by God. And we need to give them the feeling that, no, it happened, but you're not abandoned by God. God didn't do this. This is the earth itself reacting to the amount of sin that's going on. And there's a lot. You know. So these kinds of things. So whatever it is we do with our mind, we have to make sure, you know, is this a thought that Brahma Baba would think? Is this thought polluting my inner space or not? Is this thought worth thinking? So whether you're churning, cogitating, ruminating, thinking, whatever, you know, the word you use doesn't matter that much. What matters is the quality of thought. Because only when we have whole days without negative thoughts are we able to actually control our emotions and our thoughts. As long as there's a mixture of positive and negative thought and we remain ordinary human beings and we're unable to do anything extraordinary. So Baba is asking us to be ready to do extraordinary things with the mind, which is called service with the mind. You can't serve with the mind if it's also entertaining negative thoughts or waste thoughts. So it's like as if we don't have the right to engage in those thoughts, and it really doesn't matter whether anybody behaves well or badly. That's nothing to do with anything. If we're ordinary, then we think badly of those who are behaving badly, but we can't do that anymore. We don't have the right. We have to just be detached from that, be a witness of such scenes in drama and get on with what we are supposed to be doing. And then I think we can say, yes, I am a yogi. This kind of thing. So we just have a couple minutes if anyone has a question, yeah? Ah, you have to be like Daddy Prakash Mani. No fear. And total love. And then you can leave your body when you want. I think mostly you get a little message. Huh? Okay, it's time now. Are you ready? And you say yes and go. Like that. You were saying something?
Yeah, what I was going to say is that the time.
Yeah, it's not a question, but it's a comment that when you're taking the point of the Murli, you want to really understand it and experience it and then have faith in the power that you're working with. When he says, remember me, it's broad and it can be just a point And it can be everything that he stands for and everything he talks about. So we have a lot of scope. I think we have to know, is this a moment for me to go totally quiet? Is this a moment for me to just let go of everything and put it in Baba's hands? So remember me really means that we're aware of him. We don't lose awareness of him at all times. Because when we're out of contact with Baba, then we do everything according to our own limitations, and that can put us on the wrong track or put us into a feeling of separation. So we need to be, you know, he talks about also the combined form. So that's also something to include in that. I'm always combined with Baba. Total recognition takes all your life. Little by little, by little, by little, by little. You see, because I think it's very important to realize that we're on this journey, we're gradually understanding it. Most of us have a lot of intellectual arrogance, that we think we've figured it all out. And as we go further, we find that that arrogance gets removed by different circumstances. And then we can be like Baba, the one who is completely humble and incorporeal. And go. Yeah, but intellectual arrogance is quite an obstacle because we're very sure. Yeah, we understand, we know. And we tell people. But it's actually intellectual arrogance. But we have to have it and we have to get over it. And it takes time. We use words, total, absolute, complete, da-da-da. He also uses them, but we use them in an arrogant way. He uses them in a real way. It's interesting, the difference between a soul and Baba. Because the thing is, it takes time for us to be really realistic about who we are and what we know and what we don't know. And that's why it takes so much time. And it's also, I think, why Gyan is a process of a disappearing. And the ego has to disappear, and the false self has to disappear, and the convictions that are based in body consciousness have to disappear, and your conviction is that that is based in soul consciousness, and that also has to go. So it takes time. And so patience is very good. And to be ready to sort of deconstruct the self from time to time. So you go back to the point and start to build yourself every so often. Otherwise, you see, if you do it just once or twice and think, okay, that's enough, you don't progress any further than that. I think we have to keep on doing it for the whole of our lives so that we can actually experience a continuity of progress. Otherwise, as many people, they just, you know, they're in Gyan for a few years and they go to a certain distance and then they just stay at that point and they don't progress anymore. And that's a pity, you know, seems to me. We have to keep on finding ways to keep the progress going. It's very easy to get complacent and get fixed in your own way, and then that's it, you just stay that way. And as far as you got, maybe in 10 years, and you don't get any further, though you may have 30, 40 years further that you could go. Look at Dadi Jenki, how she is always in progression. And so that's a very good example for us. Never leave the idea of being a student and learning and realizing that, well, I know a little bit, but there's so much more to know. And keep on keeping the self changing, growing, refining all these things.
Shanti. Thank you very much.